It's time for this week's edition of our Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We invite you to join in on this Friday, April the 26th. Governor Walker, as we just heard in state news, may change his mind about increasing funding for the UW system in the next budget in light of the disclosure of a big cash reserve in the system's coffers. We'll talk about that story and many more coming up in the Week in Review. If you have a story that you would like to talk about, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We will start this hour talking about the lead story in NPR News this hour, whether or not the U.S. should get involved in the civil war in Syria, given the news that the Syrian government might be using chemical weapons. We'll wonder what you think about that and what our guests think about that as well. Let me welcome our guests. Keen Winters, financial planner from Schofield, a member of the Wausau City Council, a member of the steering committee of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. Good morning.
Good morning.
And John Smart is with us, past chair of the Price County Democratic Party and a regular contributor to Fighting Bob and newspapers around Wisconsin. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, Keen.
Well, let's talk about this. This is a breaking story to some extent here. Senator John McCain says it's pretty obvious that the red line has been crossed. Senator McCain is referring to what the Obama administration had said was a line in Syria's government that Syria's government shouldn't cross by using chemical weapons in the country's civil war. Now the administration says it has varying degrees of confidence that Syria has twice used those weapons. And Senator McCain says it's time to do what he has been suggesting for more than 2 years, that being establishing a no-fly zone over Syria and giving weapons to the rebels. So, Keen Winters, do you think Senator McCain is right?
Well, and in many ways, I think the Syrian government has forced our hand in this. We did say there was a line. You know, the slaughter there is tremendous, and the question is, you know, can we stand idly by anymore maintain our credibility? And now that they've crossed this line, I think a no-fly zone certainly is a reasonable first step, and then we really need to look to coalition partners, particularly ones from the Middle East like Turkey, to talk about a next step.
Yeah, John Smart, what are your thoughts?
I would kind of agree with that, too. I think that we have been standing back perhaps too long in this case with Syria, and hoping that they can resolve the situation themselves, and now it seems to be getting out of hand. I think that we need to get a lot more confirmation of what this might be happening over there with chemical weapons and so forth. And I think that a no-fly zone, as we did over Tunisia and so forth, I think is probably a good direction to go. But the American people, I'm sure, are somewhat hesitant to get involved in yet another Middle East crisis, are getting involved militarily at any rate. So I would be a little bit cautious yet.
Yeah. Democratic Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois says something has to be done, but that the decision is up to the commander-in-chief. And we heard that President Obama is looking for, I guess, more confirmation that these chemical weapons have indeed been used.
I would also feel better about it if I could hear something about what the United Nations feels about it. If we can operate through the United Nations, it will give us a more international approach, I think.
Yeah. Well, we have some. Let's take a call from Dan in Franksville. Hello, Dan.
Yeah, I'm worried a little bit about the United States or even Britain. In the news report, they talked about Britain, too, getting involved with Syria as far as chemical weapons. I mean, these two countries have almost like zero credibility as far as worrying about chemical weapons. I mean, there's an ample amount of evidence in Fallujah. They burned that city on using napalm. In that city, they call it white phosphorus, but it's napalm. And both them countries used it. There's people's MPs in Britain that have completely gone over it. And the evidence is there. So these people talk about they're worried about chemical weapons. You got to be kidding me! And that's not even including the depleted uranium, which is nuclear waste that just litters Iraq.
Yeah. So John Smart, do you have any thoughts on that? The U.S. And Great Britain have used chemical weapons, so therefore they have no credibility in this situation?
Well, I agree with the caller in the sense that there's credibility at stake here, and I'm not sure exactly how we should go. And that's why I suggested that we need to work through the United Nations so that doesn't appear to be the U.S. and Britain going in on their own. I think that we need to get international support for this.
Yeah. Keene Winters?
Well, I think there's a world of difference between in the campaigns that we have fought in Iraq and Fallujah or in helping out the Europeans with the Libyan situation and what really the Syrian government is doing, really unleashing military weapons on their civilian population as primary targets. I mean, and the slaughter has been tremendous and ongoing, and it creates one of those situations like we had in Rwanda. How can the rest of the world sit by and watch this happen? And I'm not sure the United Nations, I think John's right, it'd be great, but the question is whether the Russians and the Chinese perceive it in their interest, and they are not so much motivated by what happens to civilian populations. So it might not be possible to do it through the UN, but it certainly will be possible to do it with regional neighbors, who I think have had it with the violence that's going on there.
Carl and Matt,
I'm sorry.
Okay, so go ahead, John. I was bringing a caller. Go ahead.
I just wanted to emphasize something that Keene mentioned before about the importance of Turkey in this whole matter. Turkey seems to be the most stable government of its kind over there, and I think that we ought to. And they're, of course, getting the overflow of refugees from Syria, and I think that we need to work with Turkey very closely.
Let's welcome Carl in Madison. Hello, Carl.
Yes, hello. I do think the United States' credibility is at stake. We had a real misadventure in Iraq under really dubious circumstances where we were talking about them having weapons of mass destruction, and now we're in a situation where there really is a huge humanitarian crisis, and we find ourselves ambivalent about going in because we've already, committed so much money and gone so much into debt over these foreign misadventures that we've already participated in. So it seems as though there's a long trail that follows you when you make a military decision that is ill-advised, and now we find ourselves really strapped for cash and facing something that we probably should be involved in.
Keene Winters?
Well, I think there is some challenges given the history in Iraq. I guess we've been talking a lot about U.S. credibility, and more important to me than credibility is that there is a significant amount of civilian deaths occurring every day on the ground. And morally, how long do we tolerate that? And I understand we don't have the resources to be the world's policemen, but this it's been going on. It's being ratcheted up. It's now, we've been using helicopters, fixed-wing aircraft bombing, and now we're taking it to a new level, chemical weapons. There has got to be a line, and I think we've said what the line is going to be, and now it's not just a question of are we credible, are we going to really do something meaningful that impacts people's lives in a positive way?
Mm-hmm. John Smart?
I would agree that there's a danger involved here, and that's why I was stressing the idea of working through the United Nations. I think we need to do that on a much more regular basis, and I understand Keene's concern about whether China and Russia would agree, but under the circumstances, I think that they're kind of turning around a little bit, too, and I think that if they actually bring it up at the Security Council, I have a feeling that it would probably be able to be worked through.
Yeah. Well, what do you think, I guess, John Smart, we'll kind of conclude this discussion on Syria. What is it that you are waiting for or want to know before the U.S. would get involved in Syria?
I think that we're learning as much as is necessary, frankly. And if it were a question of the United States doing a unilateral support group of some kind to Syria. I think that we have to be very careful about that. As I said, we're still getting bombasted from things that we've done in Iraq and even Afghanistan, and I think we have to be very careful. I think the handling of the situation in Libya was good because we started out by providing air cover, and that helped the Libyan freedom fighters kind of work their way through the government. And I think that something similar could be done here. But I would, again, like to emphasize that I think the best way to deal with this is through the United Nations.
Yeah, final thoughts on Syria, Keen Winters?
Well, I agree with many of the things. I think the Libyan model is a good model. Where I think there'd be a slight disagreement is I would look for the French, the former colonial power for Lebanon, Syria, and the Turks, the primary neighbor, as NATO allies, to take the lead in this. For us to participate into the extent, and then secondarily the UN, which I think is still a dicey proposition. But regional NATO allies would be the ones that I would emphasize as primary for getting this done.
Well, we heard from our caller talking about Iraq and the lack of weapons of mass destruction, and that proved to be, of course, a very controversial part of the Bush presidency. And that reminds me that President George W. Bush's Presidential Library and Museum was officially opened yesterday, dedicated yesterday in Dallas. Keen Winters, how do you think history is going to judge President George W. Bush?
Well, I think the jury's going to be out for a while. In certainly as sort of what was been dubbed the war on terror, as that unfolds, whether we really kept America safe and did the right things there, or whether, you know, we can imagine what the world would be like with Saddam Hussein still in power, still trying to get weapons of mass destruction. And I still can't fathom for the reason why his Saddam Hussein's government decided to bluff us on that issue, and then have nothing to show for it. I want to comment on this whole notion of presidential libraries. I've just been reading a book about the interplay between Lyndon Johnson and John Kennedy between 1958 and 1964. And certainly was a great deal of scholarly research done to put that book together. And I think presidential libraries are a great part of the transparency that we value in our democracy. We may not get to know things, you know, right as they're happening, but the modern presidential library really has a lot in it that allows citizens to understand their government and the makeup of policy over time. You know, there are hundreds of millions of emails and documents there that will need to be sifted through before we get a final judgment.
Yeah, I heard that he has displays at this museum on what would you do facing a lot of the policy decisions that he faced. John Smart, your thoughts on the opening of his library museum?
Well, I have visited some of the presidential libraries myself, and I think it's a wonderful thing. And I've been to the library at the JFK Library in Boston, and I've been to the Bill Clinton Library in Little Rock and several others, and the Hoover Library in Iowa and a number of others. And I think it's a wonderful experience to be able to go there and see what you can find out. There's a lot to learn there.
Well, I know, John Smart, because I saw you posted on your Facebook page. There is President George H.W. Bush was at the festivities, and I guess that was really significant to his son, because there was a thought that he might be too ill to be there. But he was there wearing pink socks.
I loved it. I thought that was absolutely wonderful. And I thought that George H.W. Bush handled himself extremely well. He even tried to stand up there for a while. But his comments were good, and I enjoyed seeing them. And all of the presidents that were there, I think they handled it themselves extremely well. It is rather an exclusive club, after all, presidents and former presidents of the United States. And the fact that we have five of them all together at one place is really kind of amazing.
Yeah, we did. Any thoughts on President Bush's pink socks, Keen?
Not on the pink socks. I think that, you know, it's nice to see that, and I think presidential libraries do that, humanize our presidents and give us a greater insight to them as people, and to the extent the pink socks helped us out on that.
Yes. I did post a photo of the pink socks on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We're going to take a short pause here, and we will come back during the week in review, and we'll talk about the latest in the Boston bombing investigation and some other issues from the news this week. And we welcome your input. Maybe you have an issue from the news this week that you would like to throw into the discussion hopper. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, or tweet us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A reminder that this afternoon after 4 o'clock, it's your views on the news. You can call in to talk about the news story that mattered most to you. Your views on the news after 4 this afternoon. We are talking with John Smart and Keen Winters about the top international, national, and state news stories of the week during this edition of the Week in Review. Let's talk about the latest with the Boston bombings. The surviving suspect in last week's bombings says that he and his brother also planned to attack Times Square. Officials say the suspect told them that the SUV they hijacked was low on gas and that the carjacking victim got away at a gas station and called police. Earlier in the week, we found out that Russians had apparently warned the U.S. twice about the older suspect, the one that died, but that the FBI didn't see any danger. John Smart, what's your reaction to the latest developments and any thoughts on how the investigation has been going since the attacks?
Well, I'm glad I wasn't responsible for the investigation, because it's a very complicated matter. And the story that the Russians had warned the United States about this, I have a feeling, and I've been finding things online to back that up, that there are thousands and thousands of such requests or such informative articles that come through to the State Department every year from Russia and from other places as well. And I'm sure that somebody checked into it at the time, and in fact, we know that the older of the two brothers was investigated and questioned by the FBI at one point, but apparently they could not find anything particularly serious about him, so they didn't do anything further about it. And it's going to take a while for all of this to really come clear. There's a lot of question now as to whether or not they should have read the Miranda rights to the younger brother, the one who is still in the hospital, or whether they shouldn't have, and as it turned out, they got 15 or 16 hours of questioning in before they read him his Miranda rights, which some people will question as to whether or not that's legal or should be allowed, considering the fact that he is a U.S. citizen. But I think there's much, much to be learned yet about this, and I don't think we really know enough to comment yet.
No. Well, I'll ask you to comment anyway, Keen Winters. What's on your mind?
Well, I think the investigation so far since the bombing has been superb. I mean, I do think, you know, we can't rush to judgment. Hindsight is 20/20 on sort of the Russian context. But, you know, there has, I think, potentially a feeling out there that among U.S. officials that the Russians see every Chechen as a terrorist, and maybe we did not pay as much attention to that information as we should have, and so it certainly needs to be tracked down and discussed why we did not see that coming. You know, I'm not going to cut the brothers any slack on you know, they were in the U.S. They had rights of free speech. One of them had the right to vote. If they didn't like what we were doing or going on in the world, there were many ways to change that, but they bought into an ideology where you kill people and terrorize people in order to force them into submission. And that, you know, just, you know, just can't cut that any slack, and I hope they keep the death penalty on the table.
You know, surveillance cameras were praised for helping to identify the suspects so quickly, and Also in the news is that the city of Madison says it's going to add about 100 security cameras to the 200 that are already up in the city of Madison. Obviously, these surveillance cameras are in other communities around the nation and around the state as well. Keene Winters, do you have any problem with all these surveillance cameras, or should we be concerned about Big Brother watching our every move?
I'm less concerned about that. I serve on WASA's Public Health and Safety Committee. We're maybe a little less sophisticated than in Madison, but we certainly talk about bringing light to different areas of the city as crime prevention. I'd be interested to know if there was ever any cost studies to see, you know, does this $1,000 camera, how much crime does it prevent? But we certainly know that just lighting an area helps drive away crime. I want people to be safe at the bus stop. I want people to be safe walking down the street. I've had a friend who was, in fact, mugged on State Street down in Madison, hit from behind, and he was not a small person, but he was taken by surprise and hit from behind. I think it's a reasonable deterrent to crime, just like lighting.
Any problems with more surveillance cameras, John Smart?
No, I think that it's the future, whether we like it or not. I think at this point, the most surveillance cameras that are in use in the world right now is in London. And we heard about that last summer during the London Olympics. And I think that it's a very valuable tool. And whether we like it or not seems to me to be kind of irrelevant. What's important is that it helps us to do things.
Let's draw a distinction here. We're talking about, in particularly in the Madison case, putting cameras by bus stops, putting cameras from streetlights. You know, if there was a surveillance camera here in the hotel room with me, that would be an issue.
But do I want
people who use the bus, who sometimes can be either elderly or children, do I want the safeguard of a camera there? You bet.
Another issue related to the Boston bombings. The Boston bombings have worked their way into the immigration debate. Democratic Vermont Senator Pat Leahy tore into some Republicans who he says are exploiting the attacks to try to derail immigration reform. Let's take a listen.
Let no one be so cruel as to try to use the heinous acts of these two young men last week to derail the dreams and futures of millions of hard-working people. The bill before us would serve to strengthen our national security by allowing us to focus our border security and enforcement efforts against those who do us harm.
Republican Senator Chuck Grassley had said a couple of days earlier that the attacks should cause the immigration discussion to slow down to make sure that any reform is done properly and considers national security.
This is not something to be rushed. We have to get it right, like we thought we got it right in 1986. Otherwise, the goals of the bipartisan group to solve the problem once and for all will not be met. And given the events of this week, it's important for us to understand the gaps and loopholes in our immigration system.
So, John Smart, should we move ahead with the comprehensive immigration reform as planned before the attacks, or should we hit the brakes?
I frankly don't think this attack has anything to do with immigration reform, which is very definitely needed, and I think that we need to go proceed in that case. I also would like to say something about Senator Grassley. He's been around for a long time, and he didn't used to be a right-wing nut like he seems to be turning into. I think he's kind of afraid that the Tea Party is going to go after him from his right side, and he's acting a little bit screwy as far as I'm concerned. But no, I don't think so.
Keene Winters?
Well, I'll first give you a disclaimer. In general, as a financial planner, I think we'll need more immigration in the United States. As we look towards the future, competition in the 21st century is going to be between China, the United States, and India. And China and India each have four times as many people as we do. We need people here to create markets in this country. We need people here to produce at the level of our competitors. Sort of that being said, I'll give a little bit of a point to Senator Leahy. There are always questions in my mind, whether it be the Sandy Hook crisis or this crisis, on whether those are the best backdrops to form public policy. When you have essentially a horrid outlier event, should we shape our policy around that? And I'm not always sure that we should. I'll also give some points, though, to Senator Grassley, because the brothers were part of an immigrant population that was traveling back and forth to their homeland, or at least the older brother was. And one of the great problems that we have with immigration is not people just coming over the border, but people coming in legally and overstaying their visas and not being able to be tracked. And so this issue of people coming in, overstaying their visas, not being able to be tracked, yeah, we should probably look harder at that and understand that not everybody coming to this country may have the best of motives.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Keen Winters and John Smart during this edition of Our Week in Review. We'll talk about a few other national issues before Congress, and a little bit later we will talk about the UW system's cash reserve that was disclosed this week and the various political implications of that. And we will welcome your input, too, on the stories of the week that we're discussing or ones you'd like us to discuss, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's talk about the furloughs on air traffic controllers that are causing a lot of political debate this week. The House could vote as early as today on legislation that would end the furloughs of air traffic controllers, which have been delaying millions of travelers. The Senate passed the bill last night. It would give the FAA the power to transfer up to $253 million from accounts that are flush into other programs, preventing reduced operations and staffing through September 30th. So let's see. Keen Winters, do you think the furlough of the air traffic controllers was, completely political and not necessary financially?
I think this has been an excellent discussion, and it looks like we're making progress on it. And, you know, from being a budget analyst 20 years ago in Madison representing agencies to being a legislator here on the city council responding to agency requests, every bureaucracy will always tell you to do more, we need more, and to do better, we need more. And, of course, the way of the world is if we can be more efficient, do more with less, that's what raises the standard of living. And it's always difficult working with a bureaucracy to provide incentives to do this. And I think we've reached a really good, at least with the breaking news this morning, compromise where we're not going to increase the budget, but we're going to allow flexibility. But sometimes you got to shake the tree a little bit in order to get bureaucracies to sort of move and reveal their preferences. Because typically what happens is if a legislature cuts an agency's funding, the agency will find the one thing that they do that will cause the most harm to people, and they'll make the cut there if given the choice, and in order to defend their turf. And, you know, we've sort of had to, you have to do a little bit of a dance and a back and forth to get a more efficient government.
Mm-hmm. Your thoughts, John Smart?
Well, I kind of agree with what Keen just said. And I also really think that we've got ourselves into a spot nationally because of this silly sequester business. And I don't think that when the sequester was first proposed that anybody really thought it would ever actually come into force, and it has. And that's crazy. We can't deal with things that way, and I think that we need to get a more common sense thought process going on the whole business right now.
It also looks like our days of buying merchandise off the internet without paying sales taxes may come to an end. The Senate voted 63-30 yesterday to end debate on a bill that would allow states to require online retailers to collect state and local taxes for purchases made over the internet. A sales tax would be sent to the states where a shopper lives. A final Senate vote is set for May 6th. So, John Smart, do you think this is a good idea? Should we be requiring these sales taxes to be paid on internet sales?
Absolutely. I think that as it stands now, I think that those kinds of sales actually do damage to the state of the local of the buyer, because if I went to a store here in Park Falls and bought something, I have to pay state sales tax. But if I order something online and have it sent to me, I don't, and that's crazy. The problem is, of course, is that how are we going to deal with that? Because if you're a mail order business and you're trying to deal with customers from all 50 states and various other places as well, how do you possibly keep track of what the state sales tax would be and so forth? It's going to put computer programmers to a very stiff test to try to come up with a way to make this all function properly.
Mm-hmm. Keen Winters?
Well, I agree with John, particularly about the notion of having a level playing field for local businesses versus internet businesses. If one is taxed differentially, and that, you know, the tax in Wisconsin, the 5 or 5.5%, depending on the county that you live in, you know, that's a pretty substantial difference in incentive for buying at one place or another, and the government really should have a level playing field. You know, where I might disagree with John a little bit is I don't think the computer task is that hard to solve. You know, essentially you have 50 states, you certainly have a shipping residence in there, and you'll have to have a matrix about what the sales tax is for those states. But that does not seem to me to be a very challenging computer problem. It should be able to be solved quickly and easily. The computer should keep track of the information, and they should send the monthly or quarterly the checks out. Just doesn't seem that hard.
In some other political horse race news, Democratic Senator Max Baucus of Montana says he will not run for re-election next year. He played a big part in getting the Affordable Care Act passed, but the law is apparently not sitting well in his home state. He is now the 8th senator to announce he's going to retire. Keen Winters, your thoughts on Max Baucus retiring and so many others?
Well, you know, Max Baucus is 71 years old, and when someone wants to retire at age 71, I hope I'm retired at age 71. And I think there's a unique issue in politics where we have people in office and they have name recognition, and there are supporters who go to them, run till you're in your 80s. And you know, I don't know that I would want to do that. And, you know, so hats off to him for 40 years of public service, and wish him well in his retirement. And I know people will do political machinations about it, but, you know, there comes a time when all of us would like to retire, deserve to retire, and should retire.
Well, there are some, though, who are saying that maybe now the time is ripe for the Republicans to take the Senate back. Keen Winters, do you think that's going to happen?
Well, certainly the Montana seat would be a very likely one to switch parties, certainly the Republicans will make an attempt to take the Senate back based on the retirements. But, you know, things can go the other way, too. I guess I was framing this more as an individual choice for Senator Baucus. And again, if I get to be 71, someone says, well, why don't you re-up for another 7 years until I'm 77? Or, well, in his case, it'd be 78 because his term's not over yet. You know, that's a lot to ask from a person.
Just on the political or the horse race part, John Smart, are you concerned that Republicans might take back the Senate?
Well, there's a distinct difference or concern about that, sure, except that right now in Montana, they're trying to get Brian Schweitzer, the former governor, to run for that seat, and he's very popular in the state. So I don't think anybody really knows what's going to happen. But I can certainly understand Senator Baucus wanting to retire at this stage of the game after 40 years in the Senate.
One more quick political story before we move on to state issues. In the news this week, former First Lady Barbara Bush was asked about the talk of her son Jeb Bush running for president, to which she replied, "We've had enough Bushes." What are your feelings on Jeb Bush, Keene Winters?
Well, he's actually a very smart and astute politician. He's very successful, I think, in making transformations in Florida. You know, it's a question. He's certainly qualified to do it, but I can appreciate from a mother's perspective to say, you know, it's a lot to ask for one family, to do all this. Being president isn't, it's an energy draining, difficult, nerve wracking. It's a lot to ask for one family, and so. On a mother's reaction, that's the way I'd take that.
This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine with Keene Winters and John Smart. We will turn our attention to state issues in just a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, and it's time now for our Week in Review quiz. Fans of the HBO hit Game of Thrones are showing their love for the show's theme music by taking a crack at covering it themselves and then uploading it on YouTube. But there's one particular rendition that was posted recently, last weekend, that's garnered a lot of attention. Take a listen. So this particular version has a Wisconsin connection. Where in the state was it recorded? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and you will be entitled to one of the books that we have featured on the program recently. We'll give you about 5 minutes or so to call in your answer to the Week in Review quiz. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with John Smart, who is past chair of the Price County Democratic Party, a regular contributor to Fighting Bob and newspapers around Wisconsin, and Keene Winters, financial planner from Schofield and a member of the Wausau City Council, a member of the steering committee of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. And now let's talk about some state issues, including this news from Governor Scott Walker yesterday. Apparently, he is rethinking his proposal to boost the funding of the University of Wisconsin system. He had proposed in the state budget giving the UW system $181 million more than the past budget. But since the disclosure from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau that the UW has millions of dollars in a cash reserve, now he says maybe not. Maybe he's not going to propose hiking the funding for the UW system, and instead says maybe that money can be used to pay for public school aid. Let's ask you first, John Smart, your reaction to the cash reserves at the UW system and whether or not they need more money.
Well, I think it sounds to me like the UW system has done a very good job of squirreling away its money, and that's as it should be. They said that in the statement that they released was something to the effect of that they're putting money aside because they don't know what might be coming up in the coming year. And considering how this administration has been so bad at funding public schools, I would imagine that the university system is also was feeling like we better take care of whatever we can now and not plan on it. And as far as any money being taken away from them, and given to the public schools. Something needs to be done about that. Our public school levy that's coming from the state has been woefully inadequate, and I think that something needs to be done about it. And if you want to get into a discussion of vouchers and all the rest of it, we can go on from there.
Yeah, well, we can talk a little bit more about that. But first, Keene Winters, was there anything wrong with the UW system squirreling away some money into these cash reserves?
Oh, yes. We'll spar a little bit on this one, John. First of all, I would say that Governor Walker's budgets have been much kinder to the university system than Governor Doyle's budget. I think that's pretty well established. But I think this notion of planned bureaucratic intransigence really crosses a line where you have a state agency which is storing up money in case the legislature decides to make them smaller that they can just resist. That really, really crosses a line. There are other problems with that. You've been increasing tuition 5.5% a year for the last 5 years. You're asking current students to pay for education that they're not receiving, but it's being squirreled away. And, the systems administration has from time to time sent students to lobby the legislature for more money because they didn't want to increase tuition. They sent faculty down there to lobby and say, we're not paid enough compared to national standards. And here they're sitting on a big bank account. They've really stepped in it this time. And so I think that's really unacceptable for a state agency. I do hope, I like the notion that the governor is reconsidering things. And I would take things a little further and John will want to pick up on this because I'm going to take him in the voucher direction thoughtfully, but is that one of the things that I think the challenges of the university system is we put in money to a large bureaucracy and ask it to hold down tuition to make school college affordable for a lot of students. I would like to see more of that state aid attached directly to students in the form of loans, and then we could gauge the repayment on whether they take a job in the state, the loans are forgivable. And if they want to go down and make Chicago money, that's great, but repay the citizens of Wisconsin for your education. And that's going to solve a very important problem. In fact, Center Right Coalition on May 21st will be having Dr. Todd Berry to talk about the demographics of job creation. And one of the great problems we have in Wisconsin is that young people leave the state to get a job, and then job creators don't come here because there aren't young people available for jobs. So we've got to break that cycle, and I would hope that the governor and the legislature take this moment to think about attaching more of the state aid to individual students and having a repayment program.
Yeah, before we move into vouchers, though, I do want to know, John Smart, do you think there ought to be a tuition freeze? Democrats and Republicans are saying that the UW should freeze tuition at the very least.
I don't know. I'm not sure whether that would solve the problem or not. I agree with much of what Keene just said, that I think that the funding should be directed more toward assisting students rather than having it in a floating account someplace, a hidden account. But I can understand, as I said before, I can understand the administration of the university system feeling like they need to squirrel that money away because they're so unsure of what they're going to get from the state in the future. And I hope that we can get past that point, too. But I agree with much of what Keene said.
Well, Jerry in Glendale joins us. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I think that it's hypocritical for some of the Republican legislators to really take the UW system to task for this surplus when they have all fully supported the creation of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, which from day one has been riddled with mismanagement, lost loans, and a tremendous amount of money that the taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin are losing. I'll take my response off the air.
The latest director accepted the job, started on Monday, and I think resigned on Tuesday of this week. Keene Winters?
Well, I think that has been a troubled agency. I'm not sure it's a bad idea, but it's certainly been a troubled agency in the admission of that. I just see no tie-in with the UW system, and in fact, it really is unconscionable and crosses a line for a state agency to be squirreling up dollars so that they can resist legislative cuts or legislative action in the future. They are creatures of the legislature. They are a state agency. They are subject to the wills of the legislature of this democracy. They don't get to squirrel up money so that they can turn back what the state legislature tells them to do. And that really has crossed the line. I hope we do something. You know, look, a tuition freeze would be a quick way to empty those coffers. I think this is an opportunity to have a better discussion about the things that John and I were agreeing on, is that is attaching more aid to students, targeting the aid to the students who need it, and then also tying the aid to whether they work in Wisconsin or if they choose to go elsewhere, making sure that the Wisconsin taxpayers are reimbursed.
Yeah. Do you think UW System President Kevin Riley should lose his job over this, as some have suggested, John Smart first and Keene Winters?
No, I don't think so. I don't think we can hold him personally responsible for this. There's a whole administration that's been working in this direction.
Keene?
Quite possibly. I think there needs to be... How was this strategy directed and executed? He's really in the media, laid out the fact that this was really a plan for them to have money so that if the legislature chose to reduce their size, they would be able to flaunt that instruction. And that's a serious problem for an agency head to be engaged in that kind of planning, that they're going to fight and resist. They are here to serve and execute and implement the directions of the legislature, not to circumvent them. And so that is pretty serious, and to the extent that he was involved in planning to do that, I think that's not the kind of person who has the right understanding of his role as a civil servant, and quite possibly should lose his job for that.
Well, we have just a very short time left here. I promised we'd get into the school voucher issue. Governor Walker made his comments yesterday, saying that he might use that UW proposed a hike in funding to help pay for public school aid. He made those comments at a voucher school. John Smart, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think that Governor Walker is going to get his increased funding for voucher schools?
I hope not. I have a strong, strong feeling against the voucher program altogether. And now we've got statistics now that show us that students in the voucher schools in Milwaukee and Racine are not even doing as well as the students in the public schools. I don't think it's a very good idea at all. I don't think public funds should be used for private schools under any circumstances. The private schools don't have the same responsibility as far as the state is concerned regarding teachers' education and background and all the rest of it. And I just think it's a very bad misuse of public funds altogether. So I would like very much to have the whole voucher school thing dropped. I disagree with the state Supreme Court. I don't think it's constitutional to use public funds to support private schools. I think it's a bad idea.
And what are your thoughts, very briefly, Keene, as we're almost out of time?
I think parents deserve a choice on where to educate their children. I think government has a responsibility to provide those resources. And poor parents deserve as much choice as rich parents. And if my only choice is the public schools in Milwaukee and my graduation rate is 42%, I just can't allow that kind of a public monopoly to exist. Parents deserve a choice on what schools they send their kids to, and the voucher program provides that choice.
All right, it's time to congratulate Judy in Racine. She is the winner of this week's Week in Review quiz. We wondered where a particular version this particular version of the Game of Thrones theme was recorded, actually played. You can give credit to the university's Carillonor, Lyle Anderson, who played this theme on the Bell Tower's 56 bells on the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus. So that's the answer. It was UW-Madison. The video shows Lyle following the sheet music, and lots of people were walking around campus, apparently not even noticing that they were hearing the Game of Thrones from the Bell Tower on the UW-Madison campus. So, John Keene, I'd ask you if you're Game of Thrones fans, but unfortunately we're out of time. have a good weekend. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy. Thank you, Keene.
John Smart and Keene Winters, this is the Ideas Network.